come into the final furlong. Mandalone fighting for the front. Medina Spirit battles on. Hot Rod Charlie on the outside. And Central Quality on the far outside. The four of them coming to the finish in the Kentucky Derby. Here's the wire. Bob Baffert does it again. Medina Spirit has won the Kentucky Derby.
Kentucky Derby in the books. Medina Spirit winning it. And Bob Baffert goes into the history books. Medina Spirit at the sixth best odds at 12-1 to win the 147th running of the Kentucky Derby. And it was the same jockey that won last year's Kentucky Derby for Bob Baffert that was on the horse to win it yesterday. And the Puerto Rican jockey, John Velasquez, has now four Kentucky Derby wins over the last 11 years. Bob Baffert, seven wins as a owner, and there you have it. That's a record seventh Derby win for Bob Baffert, and he didn't have to run, he didn't have to train, he didn't have to do anything, so he's the smartest guy alive. Medina Spirit wins the Kentucky Derby. Local sports, Dusty.
Yes, a lot of local sports last week at the end of the week, and the big event was obviously the 81st Beloit Relays, and team champions in the lower division, St. John's on the boys' side, Bennington girls, and then the upper division, Southeast Saline, won the boys' title by 97 points, and Hoisington took the girls' championship. So many area athletes finished really well. Some of the main highlights there, J.C. Vath of Lincoln won three gold medals, 800, 1600, and 3200. Lauren Dubert won two gold medals in the lower division as well for St. John's, the javelin and pole vault. Reagan Bales of Osborne in the lower division boys won the 800 and 1600, and a double gold on the day for Grady Seifert of Beloit in the upper division boys shot put and discus. So those are the main highlights of what went down there for the area athletes, and it would take way too long to go through all of the great finishes and performances from our area. And so if you want to see the full results, you can check out ncksports.com. It's all posted there for the Beloit Relays on Friday. Also Friday, Beloit softball team picked up a sweep over Abilene, winning 5-4 and 5-0. Beloit now 10-4 on the season. The Beloit baseball team suffered the sweep at the hands of the Abilene Cowboys, 15-1 and 25-7. So all the latest scores and notes from last week, the end of the week, can be found at ncksports.com. Coming up today, local schedule a bit limited. Sylvan Lucas Lincoln softball team at Minneapolis. A doubleheader starts at 4 o'clock this afternoon. And the Lincoln Sylvan Lucas baseball team also at Minneapolis at 4 o'clock. And then the Beloit golf team will be competing at the Southeast Saline Invitational. And that actually just got underway here at 9 o'clock this morning, the Southeast Saline invite in Salina. So that's what's going on as far as local sports are concerned for today. Coming up later today, we hope to have posted. The NCK Raptors had their second meet last week there at Tipton, and some great finishes there. So we'll post all that information at Katy Country 94 and NCKSports.com. Jalen Weese held on to her leader jersey, as did Chris Heiss, and Nora Ellens also finished first in a sixth place race there. So that was last weekend, but we'll have that, got that release from the folks there for the NCK Raptors bike team, and we'll post that coming up later today as well at katycountry94.com and ncksports.com. So a lot of activity still to come this week. So again, as always, for the latest scores, news, schedules, everything you need to know about what's going on in high school sports in North Central Kansas, you can visit ncksports.com. We'll have Beloit baseball and softball streaming on Thursday, so that'll be at ncksports.com as part of what's coming up here this week. So everything you need to know there at the website, ncksports.com.
All right. I had a heart attack as I opened up the station electrical bill.
Yeah, this month is the month that's rolling through from the freeze and the extra.
My goodness gracious. I mean, that's just flat out ridiculously stupid. I mean, it's just, you know, it is amazing to me. We think about our country and our leaders. Where are all the leaders in our country? And I shouldn't say leaders. I've been told by people, leaders, they're not leaders.
No.
They're elected officials. They're not leaders. Where is the, like, uproar over this? Like, it was for a week, it was a story. But where's the uproar?
When it actually comes down, right? When now people have to
start paying for it. Yeah, it's all taken care of. Where are the political officials and elected officials? Where are they? Where are they when these bills come in to businesses and cities and people that are making it paycheck to paycheck? Where are those officials? Where are they? Where are they? Because they rush, they rush, you know, COVID, you know, we've got PPP loans, we got this, we got that, we got everything else to help, which is great. Okay, that's great. But it's like, this is just kind of blown off.
Yeah.
And now people are going to feel it once they get the bills. Let me tell you, folks, get prepared, I guess. I mean, I don't know how different everybody handles it. Like, this is the city of Glen Elder. All right. That's the bills that I've got right now. I just opened the envelope. Mm-hmm. All right. I almost had a heart attack. I'm not even going to tell you how much it is, but it's ridiculously, unbelievably high. I'm not blaming the city of Glen Elder.
No.
Let me make that clear. They got to pass on the charge somehow, some way. And there is the whole problem, is that the buck has got to be passed. And, of course, who has to eat it? It's the people that probably least can afford it. You know, there's some people that can somehow afford it.
Yeah.
But it's obviously puts a big, huge hole in the budget, just like it puts a hole in the budget for the city. So they got to pass the buck.
Yeah.
But it is ridiculous. There was price gouging. You remember when there was such a big deal, 9/11, about the gas gouging? Remember that? 9/11, gas went up like $7 a gallon. Was total price gouging. Oh, there's all kinds of investigations. They're going to come down hard on all this. Da 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 da. I don't know how many companies got shut down because of that. I would guess probably almost zero.
Yeah.
So what are we doing? What are we doing? And I really, 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 really feel for people that if or when they get a bill that is way more than they're supposed to have because of something they could not control. And they're trying to make it a single mom, a single dad, could be foster parents with foster kids. I don't know, man, but God bless you. And good luck with all of this. I'm not trying to stress you out. And yes, some people say there's payment plans. We can spread this out over 3 or 4 years. You basically just made a car loan, you're set up on a new car. We don't get a car because you got to pay because of 1 week of horribly cold weather. Unbelievable. Yeah. Unbelievable. And like I said, the cities usually have to pass it on. We had Jason Rabion, city manager of Beloit, and he's talked about various things that they tried to do to keep it down and so forth and so on. He's been very transparent talking about it. And of course, so I know that situation in the city of Beloit, although I have not received my bill for that. Well, I don't know. I have to look at the whole thing in regards to the period, because right here, the one I got, March 19th through April 19th is the ones I've got. And I sent those to the boss, and I'm sure he's going to really love that text and email I just sent him. So obviously it happens to us. Obviously it happens to a lot of other people, too, and other businesses. So I'm not sitting here saying we're the only ones. We're not individuals.
Mine's 100% of what it
Yeah, what it so would doubled.
Have been. Like, it's and kind of insane.
Yeah, this, I
for
think,
a week.
Yeah, for
it's
one.
It's 100% of what I would pay for a month.
Yeah, it's price gouging at its finest. Not by the city. Let me make that clear. It's not by them. It's by, you know, big time companies, corporations, and apparently don't even get a slap on the wrist.
Yeah. I should actually clarify. It's probably about 175% of the electrical that I would pay for a month.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I'll let the
boss take care of that one. I'm handing off that one.
Yes.
I texted and I emailed and he can deal with it because I yikes. Yeah. Holy shnikes.
Yeah.
You know, our country a lot of times is, I talk about Major League Baseball being reactive instead of proactive. Our country many times, and listen, we still live in the greatest country in the world as far as I know. You know, like everybody automatically says that.
Right.
Like I always hear this, we live in the greatest country in the world. I mean, I technically don't know for sure. I mean, let's not lie about this. I believe that I live in the best country in the world. I'm not sitting here telling you to ship me some other country. I'm happy to stay here. All right. There are things I don't like about our country. There are things I love about our country. And I'm sure if I moved anywhere else, it'd be the exact same thing. So it doesn't even matter where I live or you live or whatever. We all have complaints. We all have things we love. And I believe this is the greatest country in the world, but I really don't know. I can only go off what other people tell me. And has everybody been to every country in the world so they can tell me and compare? Because I'm guessing nobody in this world that lives right now has been to every country in the world to know that this is the greatest country. I'm guessing it is. I've been told it is. I would sure hope it is. I feel it is. So we all have our problems.
Yeah.
But it's like, seriously, we can't be a little more proactive when it comes to things like that. 1 week of a cold spell, like, put a whole bunch of people in major debt.
Mm-hmm.
But we did, it's never happened. We heard about Texas. Like, they weren't prepared for anything like this, but yet there it was showed that it could happen. And they didn't, they just were like, blew it off. And like, well, you know, it hasn't happened. And that's called reactive. And then you end up, it hurts a whole bunch of people because of people's inactivity and lack of attention to detail and just blowing stuff off. I mean, 9/11, let's go back to that. 9/11 could have been avoided. I don't want to get into a whole bunch of political stuff here, but not, some people believe it was all a big hoax, which I don't know how that's possible, but whatever. You believe what you want to believe. But 9/11, it's documented that there were signs and signals, and we had people in our world that we trust to protect us that let stuff slip through the cracks and did not take stuff seriously. And in some cases, were understaffed and couldn't get to all the leads. Yes. We say, after it happens, that'll never happen again, right? I know it's a whole different story. People did die. When they didn't have warmth, some people did die because of this cold snap. Mm-hmm. And who knows how other people die because of other things in regards to trying to make their bills, the stress, the anxiety, health issues. I joked about having a heart attack. Some people may actually have a heart attack when they open their bill. I mean, do something. You know, help the people. Instead of taking advantage of every opportunity you have, and I know not all elected officials are this way, and I'm talking at the national level, okay? The federal level is what I'm talking about right now. But, you know, those people have no idea. Those people have no idea what it's like to be regular people.
Yeah.
They have no idea. But they don't get bills like this. And if they do, somebody else probably pays for it. They a lobbyist? I don't know.
Yeah, they might get them, but they don't pay them.
They don't pay them. They don't even see them. They don't even know. Yeah. Somebody else that takes care of all that. Anyway, I'm sorry, but that just really frustrates me. And I was talking with our boss about it, and I've talked with a few other people about this recently, actually. And they all said the same thing. Where's the anguish? Where's all the we got to fix this, we're going to take care of everything, blah, 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 from our elected officials? And we're talking from both sides of the aisle. Don't sit here and make this a one-side thing. It's not.
No.
Let's, once again, we bicker and we whine and we bellyache and point fingers and don't do things to help out people. We do in some cases, but in many cases, that's even a thing that's all built around an agenda. We do it only because we think it'll help us get elected. If it's something that would really help people but might affect me from getting reelected, am I going to do it? Hell no. I want to get elected. So if I do the right thing, but it won't get me reelected, you know what? Too bad. It's just ridiculous. Where is the help? Am I missing something here? Where is the help for the cities? I mean, let's start right there. The budget, I've read unbelievable stories of how the city has a budget. Cities and towns have budgets, all right? Mm-hmm. Everybody should have a budget. They have a budget, and they plan for a whole bunch of stuff. They can't plan for a one-week unbelievable cold that we've haven't seen forever, blah, blah, blah. And then they get the bills for it, and they're like, what do we do? This is already, in 1 week, that 1 week expense for that cold snap is more than some cities' budgets for the whole year.
Oh, yeah.
How are they supposed to run a city? How are they supposed to be solvent? Well, you eventually, what typically the easiest thing to do is what? You pass along the charges to your customers.
Yeah.
And
to the people that used it, right?
To the people that used it. And you sit here and go, well, if they want to come back, well, they just shouldn't have used it. Yeah, they could have died and froze to death.
Yeah.
So they really didn't have much of a choice, did they?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's go ahead. Anything to say, save me.
No, I'm with you. I mean, well, I think a lot of people are like, they knew it was coming because, you know, that, like you said, it was a story when it happened, right?
Oh, sure.
Electric costs were going to go through the roof. Yep. Gas costs were going to go through the roof. Gas didn't really for me, but, you know, the electric cost obviously did. But then everybody was like, okay, so we just got a $1,400 stimulus check, and it's all going to go to our electric.
That's right.
That's basically what happened there.
Yeah.
For the people in the Midwest that are dealing with this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, fortunately, I'll be able to deal with it, right? But there are people,
a lot of people that can't,
and they're going to have issues with it for sure. And I've got a little apartment, right, that I'm taking care of. It's not a full house or whatever else they've got that they need that electricity for. So, yeah,
What happens if it...
Elected officials should be a little bit more serious about this.
Yeah, and they're not.
Doing something about it
to
help.
It's like it just disappeared.
It's like not, the only thing they cared about helping with was COVID, like you said, if it helps them.
That's right. Right?
Like, so they could get hey, we did a really good job on the response to this.
Right.
So we might get reelected.
Right. Yeah.
But let's. Mm-hmm. Nobody cares about the...
Nobody cares about the Midwest, apparently.
Every person that has an electrical bill that just came in that's ridiculous about it.
No, and the national media could put some pressure on that, too, but they think it's not sexy now.
No, it's not part of what they want to talk about at all.
No. All right, so now that we move off of that one, I guess, folks, I don't know where you live. You may have already seen a big bill. You may get a big bill.
Some people got
you may not. You
like
may
February,
not have
March.
A big bill. It might depend on how your city was
there
in,
are some
in
cities that are
shape, what kind of shape they were.
Because they had reserves.
Some had reserves. Some went to plan B during this thing, so they went with a little bit cheaper of source. You know, I know City of Beloit went diesel. They're trying to save and help people, and I commend them for doing that. Some cities might not have any options other than just it is what it is. This is our source of power.
Especially these smaller communities had to have been that way, right? Like they they do what they gotta do.
Right. So I want to make it clear again, I'm not blaming any cities or towns. I'm not blaming them. I'm blaming the higher-ups. And the unbelievable price gouging. And then here's the question you have to ask yourself. This is the question you have to ask yourself about this. Who's making all this money?
Yeah, where's it going?
It ain't the city.
No.
It ain't you. It ain't me.
Paying it off, just like
Who's making it? Big-time corporations and businesses that are probably getting all kinds of grants and credits by government entities. There is probably some conflict of interest, more than likely. And there's enough lobbyists to protect these big-time companies that gouge the crap out of people in cities and towns.
Yeah.
And thus, we don't get much relief, do we?
No. Not from that.
Okay. Speaking of the rich getting richer. The Chiefs.
Sports.
Yay, sports. Yay, sports. Don't want to bring people down, but I guess get prepared, though.
It is what it is, yeah.
I mean, my goodness. A review of the Chiefs' draft picks here. The Chiefs, their draft that they had over the weekend, started Thursday, Friday, ended on Saturday. Let's go to the Chiefs in their draft. And they took Nick Bolton with the 58th overall pick. The Chiefs did not make a trade in or out of the second round or move up or move down. And then they got center Creed Humphrey of Oklahoma at 63. Florida State defensive end at 144 in the fourth round, Josh Kando. How do you pronounce
it? Kando. That's how they were saying it.
All right.
Yeah.
Then they moved up a little bit in the fifth round, got a tight end. I've been talking about a tight end. Noah Gray of Duke. I'm not overly – some more people are higher on that guy than I am. I mean, you know, fine. We got a tight end, but he's not going to be the next Travis Kelce. I'm pretty confident about that. Of course, then again, who would be? Wide receiver in the fifth round, Cornell Powell of Clemson, is intriguing to me. I think that might have been a good value pick. And I'll tell you something right now. I think the best pick in this draft might be their sixth-round pick. The sixth-round pick is Tennessee guard Trey Smith, who would have been a third-round pick. He's a really good run blocker. He was outstanding at Tennessee. The problem is he had blood clots in his lungs that showed up at one point, and so that was a red flag, and people got scared of him. He dropped to the sixth round, and when you get in the sixth round, you get a guy that's talented enough. If he can stay healthy and not have recurrences of that, the Chiefs got themselves a steal in the sixth round. And I'm surprised other teams didn't take a flyer on the guy earlier.
That late, yeah.
At least fifth round. Yeah, I'm really surprised by that. So there was nothing to lose there on the sixth round, because usually a sixth or seventh round picks, unless it's Tom Brady, sixth or seventh round pick, be lucky to make the team, and if they make the team, it's a special team situation. Trey Smith has a chance to be part of this offensive line for many years to come if he can stay healthy and not have that issue that we just referred to with blood clots. I'll let you start first. What do you think in regards to the draft? Do you think the Chiefs address the positions they needed to address, and do you like their draft, and what kind of grade would you give the Chiefs? And we'll hear from Brett Beach and Andy Reid.
Listen, there's nothing I don't really like about it. Like we said going in, they're kind of open to what they can pick. They have flexibility here. And I think everybody that knows the Chiefs roster said probably linebacker or wide receiver with their first pick. Got a pretty good linebacker in Bolton, I felt like. I think the wide receiver they were going to pick went right after Bolton, so they kind of probably had their board change a little bit and Creed Humphrey's there and a guy they like.
Terrence Marshall, LSU, wins the pick after Nick Bull.
I think Creed Humphrey's a guy that can provide them flexibility on the line and is a very good value pick where they picked him, I feel like. So I think the second round picks I was really excited about. And then the rest of the way, I feel like they got some positions they needed to fill. I don't know about Kane, though, if that was that was maybe the one for me that was like, did we need that guy at this spot, you know? I would say a solid B for me. I mean, I think they did things that they needed to do, talking about a tight end to get a value wide receiver who had over 800 yards receiving last year at Clemson. And so I like him in the guard, like you said, in Smith, Tennessee, there in the sixth round could be a steal. So I like it. There's nothing I don't really dislike that I could really pick apart and say, yeah, this wasn't a good draft or anything like that.
Right. I'm not as high on the draft for the Chiefs as some people are grading it. Like, some people are giving them A-. I like Field Yates. I'm a Chiefs fan, okay? I am a Chiefs fan. But it's like Field Yates, no matter who the Chiefs pick, it's like the greatest pick of whatever round it is. And I'm like, okay, dude, you're drinking a lot of Chiefs Kool-Aid. I'll be honest, to be objective. I'll tell you, I thought the two best picks in the draft are the offensive linemen they drafted. I love Creed Humphrey from Oklahoma. I've watched him in person, gone to Oklahoma games. In fact, we thought he might come out after the season prior to this year. And there was talk about, boy, he looked good in a Chiefs uniform. And it's ironic that he did end up getting drafted by the Chiefs. The Chiefs have a need at center. Austin Blythe on a one-year deal.
Yeah.
I saw Danny Klinkskill, who used to work at 810 WHB, just continuously whine on Twitter over and over about how the Chiefs have overreacted to the Super Bowl 55 and they've gone way too crazy on offensive linemen. I think I get his point a little bit, but the thing that he's missing is that what Matthew Derrick shared with us with ChiefsDigest.com last week is that other than Toomey and Brown, the Chiefs don't have anybody else under team control after next year. Mm-hmm. So they got everybody else would be like, do you want to go into the 2022 season? Okay, I'm talking a year from now, with only Brown and Toomey under contract, because you got Niang who would still be under contract. Yeah. Don't get me wrong, but he hasn't played.
We don't know anything about him yet.
He hadn't played a snap in the National Football League. Okay, Rimmers is on a one-year deal. Wiley's on a one-year deal. Allegretti, I don't think he's going to be a part of this big picture the way this is going.
His contract will be up after next year.
Right, so he'll be gone. And Tardif, I believe, runs out either next. I know Tardif.
There's an option.
There's an option. They're not going to pick it up.
Pick it up.
So the point being is that the Chiefs, the whole from center to right guard to right tackle, they had all one-year deals basically. Mm-hmm. So when you sit here and you say, as Dan Klinkskill does, well, they've overreacted and they've got like 10 linemen and there's only going to be 7 or 8 spots and somebody's going to have to be traded or cut and they could have used some of these picks for other places, so forth and so on. Here's what he needs to understand. Austin Blythe was a one-year deal. Creed Humphrey is now the center in waiting, if not the starter day one. And then Austin Blythe could be traded or he provides insurance if there's an injury. And then next year, a year from now, Creed Humphrey's your starting center. Austin Blythe's not on the team. You don't have to worry about re-signing him, right? Okay. Right. Or maybe you do as a backup. Who knows? So Creed Humphrey, so this is your offensive line going into next season, not this upcoming season. I'm talking 2022. Orlando Brown at left tackle, Joe Toomey at left guard. Your center is Creed Humphrey. Your right guard is, I'm going to say, Trey Smith of Tennessee, who got in the sixth round. And your right tackle is Lucas Niang. Think about how young that offensive line would be. Think about that for a second. Orlando Brown would be 25. Joe Toomey, I believe, is, how old is Toomey? Is he 28, 29?
Let's see what Toomey is.
He'd be the oldest of the group.
He was 27 or 28.
I think it's 28. So Toomey's your left guard, and he's still got prime years in front of him, it looks like. Your center would be Creed Humphrey, who is in his low 20s. Your right guard would be Trey Smith, who's 21, 22. And your right tackle a year from now is Lucas Niang, who's probably, what, going to be 23, 24. The point being is that the Chiefs, now granted, it's if these two guys pan out, and health, of course, a big thing. You know, Toomey at left guard and Brown at left tackle, the Chiefs are set for a while, okay? And then you get Humphrey at center, and he'll be on a rookie deal for a while. You got Niang on a rookie deal at right tackle if he ends up being the right tackle. And now Trey Smith, who I think is going to be your right guard, and you can work him in. You don't got to rush him right away because you got Tardif right there. And you got Kyle Long you picked up. It does seem like an overabundance of offensive linemen, but if you look down the line in the future, a year from now, this was the right move because the Chiefs might have picked up not one but two anchors their offensive line for the next 5 years to protect their half-a-billion-dollar man. that's what I love about the draft, is that they got two. I mean, I thought they got two really great value picks with Creed Humphrey of Oklahoma and Trey Smith, Tennessee. Yeah. I think that's two. I think that's 40% of your offensive line in 2022 and 2023, if not beyond. So that, to me, is awesome. I'm not sold on Nick Bolton at linebacker. I'm not as high on him as many other people are. He's undersized. He's fast. He can hit. But he is undersized. I do worry about that in, say, a run game situation. Mm-hmm. And we know the Chiefs have problems against the run. But he is athletic. And I've said I wanted to get an athletic linebacker. And I think eventually maybe Bolton and Gay could be your linebackers.
Pair them together. That's what excites me about
right.
Is that they're both healthy and playing.
Because some people are like, well, that just told you that Gay's a bust. No, they could both play together. You have more than one linebacker.
Supposed to have two middle linebackers, right?
Right. So I'm okay with
they don't run a four. I mean, you know, they got guys, they need to place that middle linebacker position all the time. Like, there's not. They'll need at least two of them in there.
They need two athletic linebackers, which they really haven't truly had for a while. I'm okay with the pick. I don't know if I'm sold on Bolton. But I don't know as much as the Chiefs do, so I'll defer to Brett Veach. The defensive end in fourth round, I'm with you. I didn't know about that pick. I don't know a lot about him. Some people say he's a perfect fit for the Chiefs defense, what they want to do. I don't know. You know, I've been talking for a while about the Chiefs need to find a tight end. They probably could find him later rounds that could be, you know, eventually heir apparent to Kelce because he's not getting any younger. Gray's a better pass-catching tight end than anything the Chiefs have after Kelce, so that isn't probably an improvement. But he doesn't get separation very well. He's not that fast. He's a decent blocker, so he could end up being kind of your H-back in essence, and maybe that's how they envision him. So I'm not like going, you know, I'm not super excited about that, but at the same time, it's a top of the round, fifth round pick, so there might be some value there. The Clemson wide receiver Cornell Powell was a one-year starter. He was a highly touted recruit who couldn't beat out some other recruits that were pretty good at Clemson, and then eventually last year he did have a really good year for Clemson, made it to the national semifinals. He's got size. He's a pretty good route runner. He can be physical at times. He's a bigger target. I think that could be a really good pick, although I'm not counting a lot on it yet, because how many times does a fifth-round wide receiver make a huge impact? Well, Tyreek Hill did, but he really wasn't a wide receiver coming out of college, and he had the red flags too. So I'm not, you know, I think it's a B. I think it's solid. I love the offensive lineman they grabbed. I am surprised they didn't take a receiver a little earlier, but I'm okay with it. They did not address the secondary whatsoever. No corners. I mean, I don't need a safety, but I thought they'd go with a corner somewhere there, and they didn't, which means they feel good about Ward and Snead, and they got Fenton, and you could pick up somebody, whether they get cut at the end of preseason and guys have too many corners. You know, the Chiefs are going to end up, I think what the Chiefs are going to do, they're going to trade one or two of these linemen at some point. It could be at the end of preseason when other teams have injuries in preseason and you end up trading Tardif, although I think that would be hard to do depending on the contract and everything.
You're going to have to eat some of that salary
you
to
will.
Trade him. There's
you
no
could trade him.
Because I think
Kyle Long, I don't think you can get much for him because he sat out last year. You know, Allegretti, I don't think you can get much for him. Wiley, I mean, you might get a little something for him. Rimmers, I don't think you can get much for. Tardif would be the most appealing. And that's only if he looks good in the preseason.
Yeah.
I mean, Kyle Long and Tardif, everybody's sitting there saying Tardif's the right guard right now. I don't think so at all. I think it's an open competition. I think Trey Smith's going to have a chance, I think that you got Allegretti's going to fight for a spot. You got Kyle, basically it's Kyle Long against Tardif at right guard is what everybody thinks, but maybe Trey Smith will end up beating them both out.
Let me present something else to you as well, because when you're talking about the offensive line, I don't think a lot of people realize this. So the Chiefs needed a center because Austin Ryder's gone, right? They need a center, so they got Austin Blythe.
Right.
Let me tell you something about Austin Blythe. He's started 47 games over the last 3 years, and 31 of those have been at right guard.
So there's another candidate right
guard. So he's a guy that, when you draft Creed Humphrey, if he wins that position,
you can move
he's,
him
again,
right.
Another guy on this line that's flexible, right? Mm-hmm. So you don't put yourself in a position where you have to move everybody out of a position they've never played in some cases, like you did in the Super Bowl, to where you have flexibility and you've got guys that have played that position, know everything you need to do to have success at that position. So I think that was a little bit overlooked with when Austin Blythe signed.
Mm-hmm.
Is that because I saw it because I kind of wanted to know. You know, when I do my story, I'm like, how many starts did he have? You know, there's no stats on offensive linemen, right? So you got to go find out how many starts he had at whatever position to see, you know, who he is and what he is. And I noticed that right away, that the 2 years prior to last year, he started all of the games, both seasons, 15-1 season, for the Rams at right guard.
But
and
think
so
about,
he's flexible, right?
So this is the overabundance Danny Klingskill's talking about. And when you look at this position, that does seem to be overkill because – if Blythe ends up losing to Humphrey at center, so Blythe could maybe, you know, he competes for right guard. Okay, so you got Blythe, you got Tardif, you got Long, because you know Joe Toomey sit at left guard. So there's only
and
one.
Toomey, by the way, is he'll be 29 next year, so he's 28
okay,
right now.
Okay, so yeah, like I said, he's 28 now. So you're set at left guard. So you have a right guard position, and you've got four very viable candidates for it, all right? You've got, you mentioned Blythe, who could play right guard. You got Tardif, who all he's done in his career is played guard. You've got Kyle Long, who's played guard his career after a one-year hiatus. And you've got Andrew Wiley factors in there as well. He had been your starting guard, okay? You got those guys. You ain't counting Allegretti, who played at left guard a lot last year. So Allegretti, I think, is the odd man out for sure. And I didn't even bring up Trey Smith. So they got five guys, maybe six, five or six guys that can compete for that right guard spot. That's insane.
Yeah.
So where's the value? What's the point of having all these guys? Like, you end up cutting them? Now, you know, Tardif's going to count against cap if you trade or cut him. I mean, and I've said all along for a couple of years, Tardif, that wasn't the greatest contract the Chiefs gave out. And Tardif, after sitting out a year, what's he going to be like? And then secondly, is if you can go cheaper at that position now, that helps you swallow the pain of having to pay on Orlando Brown a big contract down the line at left tackle. You obviously paid Joe Toomey a lot of money as a free agent left guard. And then you got young guys at center and Humphrey and at right tackle, hoping the Yang's that guy. And then right guard, you could possibly have Trey Smith or even Austin Blythe for 1 year this year on a very affordable deal. But where do you get the value in regards to Tardif? You're going to have a guy that's a backup guard. I get that. So that could easily – I don't think you sign – Kyle Long could easily be cut, by the way. Kyle Long could end up not having it anymore. After sitting out a year, he had a lot of injuries. Kyle Long is not guaranteed to be on this football team. A lot of people think he is. He's not. A lot of people are like, he's a starting right guard. No, he's not. He was insurance, and he's going to be probably a backup more than likely if he makes the team. So you got tremendous competition there. You've got a lot of depth there. But here's the thing. The depth is great and all, but three or four of those guys, if you kept everybody right now, would have to be inactive on game day. And that ain't good. That's too many.
Yeah.
So it is an overabundance of linemen based on the numbers, and especially at right guard, as you and I just talked about. But if you look at the big picture, you've got an offensive line that's going to be all under the age of 30 starting a year from now. I'm not talking this season, although it could happen this season. And next season, and for the next few years, you've got four of your five spots in your offensive line won't turn 30 until Mahomes is in his eighth or ninth year as quarterback of the Chiefs. Let that sink in for a second. That's pretty doggone good, man.
Yeah.
So I like what they've done to set up their line for the future, especially if Humphrey and Smith pan out. Now, if they don't pan out, they do have insurance. They got guys. Here's the other thing. With the depth they have right now at offensive line, you can let Creed Humphrey learn, and maybe middle of the year he takes over at center for Austin Blythe. Mike Rimmer's at right tackle, and that's not who you want to have at right tackle, but maybe he can hold down the fort until Niang is ready at right tackle. Maybe Tardif is the guy, or even Kyle Long, and then Trey Smith is ready to go. You're number two at right guard. So I do like how they've set this up, and their offensive line could really be strong if the these guys pan out. We know Toomey and Brown are Pro Bowlers. That's your good on the left side. If Humphrey, Niang, and Trey Smith, and even if one of those guys strikes out, even if Trey Smith strikes out, you only get spend a sixth-round pick on him anyway.
Yeah.
You've got options at right guard, obviously. But as long as two of those three pan out, Niang, Humphrey, and Trey Smith, if two of those three pan out, and if they all three pan out, Lord, you're set for a long time. But if two of those three pan out, you're in great shape still.
Yeah.
So they have totally revamped the offensive line after one bad day, which happened to be because you had backup tackles at right and left tackle because of injuries of Schwartz and Fisher. So have they overreacted? They have seemed to have gone crazy offensive line, no doubt. And they have overlooked, but they haven't addressed. You know, could have easily got another corner. They didn't really get an edge rusher. They could have got one maybe if they didn't spend picks on offensive linemen or who knows what the case may be. But they do have a chance to have a line that's going to protect Patrick Mahomes for many years to come. And if you give Patrick Mahomes time, and we know sometimes when you don't how lethal he is, the only one time in his career he didn't have time and yet still made passes that guys, let hit their helmets for crying out loud, was Super Bowl 55. So, yeah. If this pans out, two out of these three guys that we talk about, Niang, who was drafted last year, and Humphrey and now and Trey Smith are the sixth round pick. Don't overlook that. Just because the sixth round pick, don't sit here and think he can't play. He can. He would have been a third round pick if there's no health issues.
And some what people said as high as late second round.
And most teams their line, they don't have first rounders. A lot of teams, the best teams have undrafted free agents, second, a third, a fifth, a fourth round draft pick. A lot of these lines don't have first round picks. We've already gone through it. Brown was a third round pick. He turned out pretty good.
Yeah.
So Toomey turned out pretty good, and he wasn't a high pick. So I like what they did, especially setting up their line for the future. I give him a B. You give him a B?
Yeah.
Okay, so B. All right, here's what Brett Veach had to say about his second-round picks and building that offensive line.
Believe it or not, we were open to fielding some trade-down calls, but we had some dialogue with some teams, and we felt like there were a number of players there that we liked. And, again, there was a lot of flexibility. But, you know, that really never materialized, and we sat on the board. And, again, at 58, Nick Bolton was staring us in the face, and we were extremely excited about him. And then at 63 – surprised that Creed was still on the board, obviously, but too good of a player to pass up. So as I mentioned to him when I called him, it's exciting to add Oklahoma tackle and then bring in an Oklahoma center. So again, we're excited. That's going to be an extremely competitive offensive line room, and there's going to be a lot of depth there. So as we talked about multiple times, 17-game season now, long preseason, and hopefully an extended playoff appearance for us. We're going to need all the help we can get, and we have a lot of talent there now.
There is a lot of talent. There is a lot of depth, but there's only so many spots that'll be active on game day. Here's Veach going a little bit more in depth to tell you more about Nick Bolton and Creed Humphrey. They're two second round picks.
We certainly had a lot of opportunities to watch Nick Bolton play, being local and just a great player. And you know, he's both these guys. I think, you know, we not only got better on the offense and defensive side, but both these guys, you talk about their intelligence, their durability, and you know, their leadership skills. I mean, these are two high-character players, and people are going to be great in the community. They're going to be great in the locker room. They're going to come in. They're going to learn the playbook quickly. They're going to get up to speed. A lot of this, especially, you know, last year with having no OTAs, and this year, hopefully, you know, we get into these OTAs, but I'm sure it'll be a little bit different than in years past. You know, you got to get into the playbook and you got to get caught up to speed quick. But both these guys, Adam, I mean, they're extremely intelligent. Both captains, leaders, guys that played a ton of football at their respective universities. So I think both these guys, you talk about Nick Bolton, I mean, he's a guy that can come in here and play and both at the mic position and the will position. He's got sideline to sideline range. Again, tough, smart, can make all the calls, has made all the calls. You know, you look at Anthony Hitchens, and he's, you know, he's one of the guys that does a lot for us. But, you know, when Hitch goes down, you know, we're really looking to add depth there. And then, again, his versatility to play either Mike or Will. And Creed's another guy that's played a lot of football. I mentioned earlier we had some flexibility there with Austin and with Joe Tooney. Now with Creed coming in here, needless to say, now you feel good about leaving Tooney where he's most comfortable, and that's at that guard position. And Creed now gives you a bigger center option, and we've been talking about that. Again, it'll be a great competition, and they're going to have to come in here and compete, and may the best man win. Austin's shown that he can come in and play, and he's done that over his career and shown he can do that at a high level. Creed offers, you know, a bigger body, and, you know, it kind of that pocket and the way that those larger linemen can affect the pocket is certainly different with Creed blocking in there. So, again, it'll be great competition, and we have some flexibility now, and we have, most importantly, a lot of depth.
All right. What does Andy Reid, the head coach, think about the second-round picks?
My hat goes off to Brett Veach and his crew of scouts and really the whole personnel department there of just batting down and taking the best players at the spot once we got to this position, taking the best players that were there. It takes discipline to do that. And Brett did that, and I think we came out with two good football players. Obviously, time tells, but they sure were good college football players. We think he'll transfer right into here in Kansas City. Both good citizens, too. Good kids.
All right, so Nick Bolton, linebacker in Missouri. Matthew Derrick, Chiefs Digest, with us last week, said that Nick Bolton is one he thought the Chiefs would target at linebacker. I had been pleading that they get some kind of athlete linebacker. Bolton is that, so we'll see if he can handle it, even though he's a little bit undersized. And, you know, last week we were talking about probably the two positions they go with in the second round. We both said linebacker, and I don't know if we both said receiver. I know I said I thought they might go receiver with their second pick was my prediction. I didn't think they'd go an offensive lineman in the second round, but then obviously Creed Humphrey slides there. I mean, you got to take him if he's the best on the board, and they did. Nick Bolton shares with us what he brings to the game and to the Chiefs.
Just being smart and instinctual. That's kind of how I play. So I just kind of feel like bringing that to an NFL team, put myself in a position to play. I've got the opportunity to. So just kind of being an intelligent player, being smart, playing fast, physical, tough. All the characteristics need to be a great NFL linebacker. I feel like I have those characteristics. And so I'm just ready to go out there, have a chance to compete.
Bolton's excited to play close to where he played college ball.
Yeah, so it's exciting. Just being there, kind of where my career kind of started taking off a little bit. Being in Missouri, being around that community, being around close to University of Missouri, that's kind of good in my heart. So being close to Missouri, playing for the Chiefs, was one of the dreams come true. I didn't know until a couple minutes prior to the pick. I talked to the coaches. I knew that they kind of liked me, being in Missouri, being kind of close. They could see me a lot. So I knew they kind of liked me a little bit, but I didn't know until the draft was called that was they're going to pick me.
Creed Humphrey, excited to be a Chief as well, and he'll get to play with his former teammate at Oklahoma, Orlando Brown.
Oh, I'm so excited. You know, I'm really close with Orlando. He's, you know, helped me a lot. He's mentored me a lot at my time at OU. So, you know, just being able to be on a team with him, I'm really excited about, and then be able to join such a great organization. You know, I'm so excited. I can't wait. You know, I had a lot of conversations with a lot of teams, and, you know, I felt it went really well when I talked to them. So, you know, I knew what kind of organization I could get into if I came here. So I was, you know, as soon as I got that call, I was just so excited. And I'm ready to get to work.
All right. Best pick out of those picks the Chiefs made. Best pick.
I think it's Humphrey.
I think it is too.
Yeah.
I think it is too. Sleeper pick, I think it's got to be Smith, the guard.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And the most questionable pick?
I think it's Kando.
The fourth round pick, DN from Florida State.
Maybe that's just because I don't know enough about him.
Could
right?
be. No, I tend to agree with you a little bit. Well, this is the fun part. Everybody grades drafts as they are, but we have no idea.
Yeah, we put it a B. And
we need to regrade them from 5 years from now.
2-3 years from now, it could be an A+, it could be a D-.
Or worse.
It could be an F.
It could be an F. Yeah, exactly right. We shall see. Humphrey from the Big 12. The Big 12 only had 22 players drafted. Mm-hmm. That was fifth out of the five Power 5 conferences. Yeah.
Have any in the first round, you're already behind the eight ball.
Yes.
as far as numbers of people that are going to get drafted.
That is correct. What about KU and K-State players? Wyatt Hubert was drafted in the seventh round by the Bengals, but what about KU and K-State players? Yeah, I know Puka Williams has signed an undrafted free agent deal with the Bengals as well, so Puka and Hubert could be teammates.
Yeah, some of these guys I don't know right off the top of my head, so let me pull that up real quick. I know that A.J. Parker, Briley Moore to the Titans, undrafted. A.J. Parker to the Lions. Elijah Sullivan, 49ers, and Keandre Thomas to the Browns. Those are the K-State guys. And Puka, I'm pretty sure, was the only KU guy.
I think so.
That even got signed.
I think you're right. Yeah, and he went to Cincinnati.
Yeah.
So there you have it. In regards to the draft as a whole, you know, I was there anybody that you think had a great, unbelievable draft?
Man, I haven't even
Anybody you think had a really bad draft? Like, you know, the Broncos, I like the Browning kid that they got, a linebacker, Ohio State at 105. He went in, what was that, the fourth round. That was a guy that some people thought the Chiefs might end up getting. So I like that pick. You know, Surtain, they got a cover corner, although many people thought the Broncos would, you know, end up taking a quarterback, which would have been Fields or Jones, and they passed on those, which is very interesting. Of course, what we got to follow now is if the Packers are crazy enough to trade Aaron Rodgers to somebody, and if so, where does he go? And there's reports now that Rodgers is intrigued by the Raiders, and we know John Gruden obviously loves Aaron Rodgers. Who wouldn't? The Raiders have to give up a lot, and I honestly say go ahead and do it. I mean, I know Chiefs fan will get all freaked out if Rodgers goes to the end of the division, but go to the Raiders and you see how that works out for you. And the Raiders, you know, are all in to win now, and then they'll still be bad for the next 5 to 10 years because they give up a ton of draft picks to get Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers could easily play another 5 years. It might be the greatest trade the Raiders ever make. Oh, Aaron Rodgers could go to the Raiders, have struggles, you know, getting into that system. It's just not the right fit. Or he might have a couple of really good years, and that's it. I'm not, you know, we've got our guy, Patrick Mahomes. So I'm not going to be scared.
Nothing scares me.
That comes in the division, myself. The Raiders got a B according to some grade places. The Chargers had a really solid draft. They got a tackle to protect Justin Herbert. just like the Chiefs did with Orlando Brown in the trade with Baltimore to protect Mahomes. They got Asante Samuel Jr., a little bit undersized, but an outstanding corner for Florida State. They got some value. Ben Neiman's brother is going to be within the division with the Chargers. He was a fifth-round pick. They got a guy that you can watch out for is that could do some good things is the Missouri running back Larry Roundtree III. He's got some potential. He was a sixth-round pick. So I think the Chargers had a really good draft. If I had to grade the drafts as to the divisions, I think the Chargers had the best draft of anybody in the division. I think the Chiefs had the next best draft. And then I think the Broncos had a solid draft for the most part. And I think the Raiders weren't bad either. I don't think anybody in the division made major mistakes. The Raiders reached a little bit, went early with an offensive tackle, Alex Leatherwood, and they could have probably waited, mm-hmm. but they do that every year. But all in all, I think the Raiders probably had the worst of the four. And I'd say the Broncos the third best, although they could put them right, maybe close enough, maybe right there with the Chiefs. But once again, we can grade all we want. we ain't going to know until 2, 3, 4, 5 years from now. Yeah. And usually people still don't take the time to go back and regrade it, even though they probably should, to be honest with you. All right. Yeah. KU has a new head football coach. It is Lance Leipold. That's how it's pronounced. Leipold, not Leopold, or not Leopold, or, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio. It is Lance Leipold, and he is the new head coach at the University of Kansas. Comes from the University of Buffalo. Travis Goff, the 41-year-old AD, was hired recently at KU to replace Jeff Long. On what stands out about Lance Leipold, the new head coach at KU?
This is easy to describe because I heard all of it coming in, and then I got to witness it and feel it and see it with my own eyes and with a group that was with me along that journey over the last couple weeks. Incredible man of integrity. Shine through every step of the way. Everybody we talk to, that's just who Lance is, and that's who his family is as well. You know, he's a program builder. He's a proven winner, done it at multiple levels, and he's done it in multiple ways as well. And that's one of the things that I loved understanding about Coach, and he's got a great philosophy about how to develop young men, how to attract them and develop them over the course of their time with him. But he'll find different ways to win. He can win in the air, win on the ground, win defensively, strong special teams. And again, it's just been proven time and time again. And at the end of the day, what I knew coming in, what I believe coming in, what was crystallized for me and for us in the process is we needed somebody that could come in and build a program that could be sustained. And that's exactly who we have with Coach Leipold.
All right, so Leipold is the head coach, very successful at Buffalo. Happy to be at the University of Kansas.
Oh, it's so exciting right now. I can't even believe it's real. It's a dream come true. And just a few hours, 24 hours or so being here, just seeing everyone and the excitement. We could not be happier as a family and ready to get going.
And Leipold on choosing KU and working with Travis Goff.
Travis especially is that... you know, even at our time in Buffalo, I had three athletic directors before my fourth season. And to be able to come in with someone like Travis, his background with the university, but yet just getting here himself, I just thought was a great opportunity to partner with someone to build a football program that the university and our alumni and fan base can be proud of and really get on the ground floor of something. And I really felt that it was something that kind of fit my niche and an area of the country I want to be back in. And all those things just check so many boxes that it was something that we wanted to pursue.
And his philosophy and his feelings on building a program?
It's always been our philosophy to take the talent that we have and use it to its best. And I think with that, though, is that we've always had flexible enough schemes that we're gonna be able to play to our strengths and do some and be able to utilize that. Fundamentally sound. You know, again, when you're building a program and you're trying to fight your way up the standings, you gotta be detail oriented. You gotta be great in fundamentals. You gotta create turnovers and protect the heck out of the football.
So Lance Leipold is the new head coach at the University of Kansas. When can KU fans expect them to be competitive?
I always think, you know, if you can, again, work on that improvement, do some things, find a way to get games into the fourth quarter, you know, bowl eligibility isn't far off, okay? Now, we're not here to make promises and do those things. I'm going to promise that the staff we assemble and the people in our program will do it the right way, and we're going to work every day to make everyone affiliated with this program proud. And we had that same sort of recipe at the last place, and it was like all of a sudden you find yourself at bowl eligibility, and the next year you're playing in a conference championship. So we're going to do our best to make that happen here, and sooner than later.
And he discusses what makes his team so successful.
Yeah, you know, people ask that, and I still think it goes to daily improvement. You can't spend time looking too far down the road or spend time looking in the rearview mirror and patting yourself on the back about, you know, what you've accomplished. Everyone's trying to get better. And if you stay in the moment and challenge yourself for improvement, and I think those are things that, you know, people that have worked with me have done a great job of also emphasizing, and our players have embraced that.
Lance Leipold is the new head coach at the University of Kansas. He signed a 6-year contract that'll pay him an average of $2.75 million per year. The deal for the Jayhawks' new coach, which will pay him $16.5 million in total, includes a pay increase each year. So although KU has agreed to pay him $2.2 for his first year on the job, if the former Buffalo head coach is still in Lawrence in 2026, he'll see that salary grow to $3.3 million in his sixth year. The $2.2 million Leipold will make this year is less than any Big 12 coach was paid in 2020. Chris Kleiman made a little bit more at $2.3 million. KU paid $3.3 million for Les Miles. Of course, that didn't work out too well. So Leipold's base salary is set at $500,000 per year, but his income from the deal gets hefty boosts with annual personal service payment beginning at $1.36 million a year, as well as a yearly royalty payment of $340,000, and so forth and so on. Bottom line is Lance Leipold will make $2.2 million his first year, could make up to $3.3 his sixth year, if he's still head coach at the University of Kansas in 2026. So he was successful at Buffalo. He won Division III national championships, three of them, at Wisconsin-Whitewater. So he has been a proven winner wherever he's been so far, and he is now the new head coach at the University of Kansas, and they hope he continues his winning ways. Speaking of winning ways, the Royals' winning ways have come to a bit of a stop. The Royals lose 2 out of 3 to the Twins over the weekend. They lost the first game big, then they came back and won the second game big, and then they lost the third game big. 13-4 was the final. Kind of the highlight for the Royals in this one was Hunter Dozier.
Bubich is no longer throwing in the bullpen. Dozier hits one to left field, deep, and it is gone. And now suddenly it is 7-3.
Here they come.
Well, that was about it, though. Hunter Dozier, 3-run homer in the top of the fourth. Royals give up 7 in the bottom of the third in Minnesota. Brad Keller, another rough outing, although he didn't get helped by his defense. 7 runs, only 2 of them were earned. 3 Ks, he gave up 2 homers, though. ERA is over 8 for the ace of the Royals, which he's not the ace right now. That's Danny Duffy. 4 1/3 pitch by Keller. He's now 2-3 on the year. And then every time Jake Newberry comes up for the Royals, he serves up a home run. It's like I can't keep track whether he's in the alternate side. He's going to the minors. He's coming back. And then all of a sudden, he's still. I was like, did he ever leave? So the Royals get pounded yesterday. 13-4 was the final. Of course, Saturday, Danny Duffy was great again. His ERA is .60 and has the second-best ERA in the big league. So he has been and has played and has pitched as an ace. And that's what we've been looking for him for a long time. The thing is, can he keep it going over the course of a full year? We've seen stretches where he's been very dominant, but can he put it together for a long extended period of time? I'd say Yordano Ventura's old number 30 has served him well so far. It's almost like he's channeling Yordano a little bit, although Yordano never had a stretch like this in his time with the Royals before he tragically passed away in a car accident during one of the off seasons. So the Royals, speaking of pitching, they are going to have their top prospect at the minor league level right now as a pitcher. That is left-hander Daniel Lynch. He's going to make his major league debut. He is the number 2 prospect in the Royals system, the 24th in Major League Baseball overall. Royals are 16-10. The Indians are 13-13. Royals open up a series with the Indians tonight at Kauffman Stadium, and Lynch will make his major league debut. He was part of that 2018 draft class. And so here we go. You know, the Royals were getting guys they thought could contribute very soon to the team when drafted, and Daniel Lynch is one of those guys. You know, we've seen Chris Bubich already. We've seen Brady Singer. Obviously, we like what we see from Brady Singer. Jackson Kowar is down there in the minors. There's other guys, other young arms the Royals got. Plenty of them down there. And Daniel Lynch is going to get his major league debut tonight. He's 24 years old. He was going to start the minor league opener on Tuesday. He's been at the alternate site, and the Royals deemed him ready to go ahead and make his first big league start. You know, Kowar is the Royals' number 4 prospect. He's still in the minors, but he could be up here soon too. Who knows? But this is the top pitching prospect right now for the Royals, and that's Daniel Lynch, and he's going to make his debut tonight against Cleveland. And you sit here and you go, how does this work? Because Jacob Junis has pitched pretty well. Dayton Morse said Sunday night Lynch will take over Junis' spot in the rotation. with the rest of the starters expected to stay on turn throughout next homestand. So that means Minor, Singer, Duffy, Keller, and Daniel Lynch, which means the Royals have three left-handers in the rotation, Minor, Duffy, and Daniel Lynch. You know, Junis, honestly, if there's a guy you need to kick out of this rotation, it should be either Mike Minor or Brad Keller. Junis has been better than both of those guys.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're Jacob Junis, like, what else I got to do to keep my spot in the rotation? Because Brad Keller, he's been the worst of all of them. I know you're not going to send Keller to bullpen. I will say this. Mike Minor is a guy that's pitched in the bullpen many times.
Yeah.
And if you had Jacob Junis in the rotation and let Minor go to the bullpen, would make sense to me. You'd have three righties, two lefties, another lefty in the pen. But they do like Junis' stuff in the pen, but it's been pretty good in the rotation as well. Now, if Daniel Lynch has a problem or somebody gets hurt, the first guy that they're going to go to will be Jacob Junis more than likely, or Irvin Santana as a spot starter, but they like him in long relief. But, you know, Mike Minor, probably one of the things, too, is when they signed him, they basically said, listen, you're a starter. And
yeah.
That's the reason he signed with Kansas City. But interesting rotation, and if Lynch can stick, that makes the Royals a deeper team.
Oh, absolutely. There was talk about Keller in our group yesterday, and I'm like, there's only one thing you can do with Keller right now if you want him to stay on the team, if you don't want him to be a starter, and that's put him in the bullpen. He literally has no options. He was a Rule 5 draft pick.
That's right.
You don't have options on Brad Keller to send him down.
No,
you will DFA him, designate him for assignment, which basically releases him. And there's a chance he can get that back if he clears waivers. But, like, there's not – I think everybody's just like, well, just send him down to the minors, get it figured out. Just a lot of people don't understand how
options
work and everything. So, there was like, there's rumors he's going to go down. I was like, he's not going down unless he clears waivers.
Yes.
And wants to come back on a minor league contract with the Royals.
This will be interesting.
It's not going to happen right now. Like, I mean, if it keeps going like it is, he could easily be DFA'd. But I think they might maybe try the bullpen before they would just say, hey, we're going to designate.
If you think about the Royals' future rotation, we're talking about the future with the Chiefs' offensive line and the youth. Right now, you're looking, and this is what we've been talking about for the last couple of years, ever since that 18 draft. And you can't count on all these guys they drafted to pan out. The odds are against it. But if you look at the future of the Royals' rotation, right now you've got Brady Singer. And if Daniel Lynch pans out and you got Brad Keller, if he figures it out, which he's been good the last couple of years, so there's, I mean, he could easily figure it out. But if Keller is a stick, if he stays, he's 25. That's three. Coar is going to be a fourth. And then you've got many other options. Yeah. Lacy, down there.
I think is the main guy.
I think that's the guy they would want to be the fifth guy. He's a left-hander, tall left-hander, power arm. You got Bubich, who I think he'll be a bullpen guy or a fifth starter in his career. But that's an arm. They've got other options as well. Bolin, guy's pretty good down in the minors. He's had some good numbers. And there's others that I've left out, to be quite honest with you. But you look at the future, and then Carlos Hernandez, they like him and his arm, by the way. And he's been playing a little bit this year at the big league level, and he's young, kind of inexperienced, but he's got a great arm. So if you think about it, you got Singer. I think ideally you're probably thinking Singer is your number one starter.
Mm-hmm.
And then your number two starter is probably, ideally in the future, is probably maybe Lynch. And then Keller, and you see where I'm going here? Right, left, right. And then who is my other one?
Coar. And Lacy.
And he's right-handed, right?
I'm pretty sure.
And then left-handed is Lacy.
Yeah.
So there you go. There's your right, left, right, left. I mean, that's perfect in regards to a rotation.
Yeah.
And that's the future rotation the Royals could very well have. And right now, we're talking about the Chiefs having two-fifths of their offensive line, and if Humphrey and Niang and Trey Smith, the sixth-round pick, pan out like he's capable of, that could be an offensive line that's extremely young, that's really great for the next 4 or 5 years for Patrick Mahomes. The Royals got a similar situation. Right now they have two-fifths of that filled. They've got Keller and they got Singer. And if Lynch ends up being a guy, there's three. And you get Coar and Lacy down the line, there's four and five.
Yeah.
And if those guys all together, man, look out.
Well, yeah, if it works like you it'd be a crazy rotation.
It would be.
Yeah.
You notice the word we've used a lot on the show today, ladies and gentlemen,
yeah,
is that two-letter word that starts with I and ends in F.
Yeah.
A lot of Fs.
It's a long if. Right?
It's a big if, yeah. And, you know, guys blow out their arms, and that kills that whole idea very quickly.
We had a lot of ifs about some guys that got traded for Johnny Cueto and Ben Zobrist, too. And,
yes, Brandon Finnegan, you know, we thought would be good.
You never know how it's all going to pan out.
Thought Finnegan would be good. And he ended up, you know, starter for a while, but not great. Yeah, the Royals, none of those guys panned out. None of them. What was the John Lamb had a lot of
Manaea had a stretch there for the A's, but he wasn't late. My
had a no hitter.
It's like a not dominant long period of time.
He's the only one really doing all right. He's with the A's, and he's still got potential to pitch for a while. But yeah, that's the only one you've really lost at. And he was one of the in the Zobrist trade. He wasn't even part of the Quaker trade.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Speaking of the Oakland A's, you hear about this. Starting pitcher Jesus Luzardo was placed on the injured list on Sunday with a left hand fracture. But there's more to it. Apparently, the left-handed pitcher worked his outing Saturday with the fracture of his pinky. He turned in a bad outing, 6 runs, 3 earned, and 3 innings. Well, that's not really the story here. Do you know how he hurt his hand?
I do.
He suffered the fracture while playing video games. His manager said Luzardo bumped the pinky while playing, but that seems like an understatement considering we're dealing with a broken bone here. We've all seen our fair share of people bumping things when they get angry at a video game, right? I've been guilty when I was younger.
Had the flat Nintendo controller that you could really just slam right on the floor. Oh, yeah. It worked really good.
Oh, yeah. He has a hairline fracture in the pinky finger from playing video games. Thus, he's on the injured list. So, safe to say the A's may monitor how much video game playing Luzardo makes in the future.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, you have these bizarre, weird injuries that happen to big leaguers. And it usually happens in baseball, usually, for some
just
weird
trip
reason.
Trip down the stairs. Cut your finger with a knife when you're cutting an apple. Remember who did that? Somebody did. Was it Jake Plummer that did the apple thing?
I remember
Plummer had a weird one.
I remember Kevin Apier. Remember him? He was helping. He fell downstairs with luggage. Well, how about Salvador Perez's? His was very weird.
Yeah.
You know, with the with luggage as well.
Yeah.
There are some weird ones. I have to look up. I have to look some of these up sometime. When
threw
we...
my back out sitting up from the couch like. It happens, but it's just like athletes, those shouldn't be the injuries that they have, right?
Some guy, I forgot when, some years ago, got hurt playing catch with his kid, young kid.
Yeah.
So, I mean, pretty crazy stuff. All right, the NBA, quick update on that. There was a marquee game yesterday, the Bucks and the Nets. Great game. Bucks won 117-114. Giannis had 49. Durant had 42 points and 10 rebounds. The Trailblazers beat the Celtics 129-119. This is going to hurt, Dusty. The Celtics were down 32 points to the Spurs. Came back and won.
Yeah,
Jason Tatum had 60. Him and Larry Bird, the only Celtics to ever do that. Tatum had 60. Tatum is absolute stud. Absolute stud. He had 33 last night, but the Celtics lost. He and Brown had a collision late in the game and they had to leave. Hopefully they'll be all right. The Heat beat the Hornets 121-111. The Kings beat the Mavericks 111-99. Luka Doncic with 30 points. The Knicks continue to play well. They beat the Rockets 122-97. Julius Randle just fills it up every night with 31. Devin Booker with 32 as the Suns escaped and got by the lowly Thunder, 123-120. And then, you know, Dusty Spurs really taking two really tough losses here recently, losing at the buzzer last night to Ben Simmons and the Sixers, 113-111 in overtime. Joel Embiid, former Jayhawk, 34 points and 12 rebounds. And don't look now, but LeBron made his return to the Lakers, and it didn't matter. Lakers lost to the Raptors, 121-114. LeBron with 19 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists. He said that I'll never be 100% again in my career. I would have said that well before this statement because all the wear and tear on his body.
Of what 100% LeBron James means,
right.
Obviously he's not going to get there.
But, you know, 90% LeBron James is better than almost everybody in the league anyway.
Yeah.
And then Anthony Davis teamed with him, who's back from the being hurt as well. But here's the interesting thing about the Lakers. They got to get it in gear really quickly because right now the Lakers, they're 72 games, and we only have 8 games left in the season for the Lakers. And the Lakers right now are tied for the 6th spot. They're tied for the 5th spot with the Mavericks, and they're tied for the 6th and the 7th spot. So what I'm telling you is the Mavericks, the Lakers, and the Blazers are 5, 6, and 7. And if the Lakers fall to 7, they're going to be in the play-in tournament.
Yeah.
And you don't want to be in that situation. You prefer not to.
Yeah, even as good as they are, if they're at full capability, like their whole roster's playing, you don't want to play in that game.
Of course, if it's 7 versus, they go with 7 versus 8 for the 7th spot, and Lakers win that game, they only play one extra game, and they beat the 7. But I don't know. And the Suns now are tied with the Jazz for the best record in the Western Conference. And the Nuggets have the 3 spot and the Clippers. We could have Clippers-Lakers first round.
Yeah. I don't like any of it right now.
And the Wizards with Russell Westbrook have won 8 out of the last 10, and they're moving up in the standings. And the Sixers and the Nets are a half game behind the Sixers, so number one seed. So we got some drama in the NBA. We've got a 2-way tie in the West for the number one seed, Suns, Jazz. And the East, half game, separates the Nets and the Sixers. Sixers with a slight advantage right now with 8 games to play. That's pretty exciting. Usually late in the year, the one seed sometimes are very easily determined.
Yeah.
So that's kind of rare to
nice
see that.
It is nice to see that, where not everything's already figured out, and you have the bracket already made up, basically, and I do like that part of it.
Sorry about your Spurs.
They'd won like 8 out of 10, and then they lose two games like that.
Heartbreaking.
It's like, whatever.
My son told me that the Celtics came back from a 32-point deficit. I said, who'd they play? He said, the Spurs. I said, right away, I go, oh, poor Dusty.
I think it was 39-16 after the first quarter.
How do you blow a 32-point lead?
They've done it in an NBA game the last three or four years.
I don't know how professionals can blow a 32-point lead.
Yeah.
That's insane to me. Like, I understand
nothing
college.
Nothing ever feels comfortable.
Well, now, it shouldn't.
Like 5 years ago, everything felt comfortable.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, if you had that lead 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years ago, you knew your defense was so good they're not coming back from
right.
that deficit.
Right.
But they also are not scoring 39 points in one quarter with those teams either. So
no, and here's another note. We talk about the Lakers. You know, if you think about the best teams in the NBA, I think right now, you know, a lot of talent. The Lakers and Celtics have a ton of talent.
Yeah.
The Lakers right now could easily, they're sitting as a 6 spot. They could easily be to the 7. The Celtics right now slid to the 7. So right now the Celtics and Lakers could be in play-in tournaments, and the Celtics would have to play the Nets in the first round.
Yeah.
And the Lakers could have to play the Clippers or the Jazz in the first round. And those are the teams you kind of think there for a while could be the favorites. Definitely the Lakers. Of course, with all the injuries. But that's crazy. The Celtics are very talented. How are they only 34-31?
Yeah, and they got off to a bad start.
Yes,
if
they
I remember
did.
Right. So they're climbing back up, but
they were playing good ball there for a while. But now they went 5-5 in the last 10. But Tatum and Brown, one of the best tandems in basketball. Kemba Walker's been hurt a little bit, but it's surprising to see that. So I mean, you could see that you sit here and you automatically used to think, well, okay, top seeds will roll in the NBA playoffs. It used to be that way, right? Mm-hmm. The Bulls got the one seed, they'll win easily, and the Warriors got a one seed, they'll win easily, and so forth and so on. And that's usually true. Lakers first, they'll roll. But right now, if you're looking at the Suns or the Jazz against possibly the Blazers or the Lakers or the Grizzlies, that's no guarantee. Or even Steph Curry and the Warriors could be a first round opponent. And the East, for crying out loud, oh, you're the Nets, you got the 2. You got the Celtics. And if you're the Sixers, you might still be all right. The Hornets are the 8 seed, so you might be all right.
Yeah, I mean, you get the 1 in the East, you should be okay for that first round.
You should
matchup.
Be. You should be.
Should.
I will say, though, all the top 7 teams in the East are over 500, and the top 7 teams in the West are all over 500, actually 8 if you count the Grizzlies. It's very similar standing-wise in regards to the records until you get to that 8 spot. And the 8 spot, it's a little bit – the 8, 9, and 10 spots are better in the West than they are in the East. But it's very, very interesting to see what we could have with first-round matchups in NBA playoffs.
Yeah. I guess I'll be ready for it when it comes. It is nice to see those spots are not all in stone right now.
I'm pulling for a Bucks-Suns NBA Finals. Just what the big wigs in corporate suits want, right?
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.